Okay. Anyone else who needs one of these handouts? Okay, so we should get started. I am Rao Kambhampati and I'm teaching this class CSE 494-598. There has been a change of rooms, so for those of you who may actually be here for a different class and just are thinking that the first day's class we can't understand anything anyway, you might actually be in a different class. So you should be here only if you are on that particular class, CSE 494-598. Okay, I have given all of you some handouts that I would like you to fill in and give back to me by the end of the class today. And that's something that you should do before you leave. And we are off to a very auspicious start. Today the only screen in this room won't be working. So you are actually going to try and read like that. Because that's the only way I can do. I mean, I have slides and you're going to see them. So that's how you're going to look at it. So let's start the first slide. First of all, how many people realize who this guy is and what this guy is doing? Come on, somebody. Actually, you should all drop the glass. This is Taiwe from the Fiddler on the Roof, and he's singing If I Were a Rich Man. Okay? If I Were a Rich Man, you know, you want me to sing? So the question is, if you were so rich that you could afford to have a superhuman web secretary, what would you have him, her, it do for you? And before you answer, please remember this is a family-oriented class. So, you know, I forgot to put that. So only PG answers allowed. Okay. So the question, the reason I do this is because I get every time I teach this class a bunch of people who are way too happy with the state of affairs. You know, they have this saucer-plated eyes about, oh, how good Google is, how good Yahoo is, how good web is. And people who are happy don't change the world. Okay? I mean, change comes from discontent. And so you have to be unhappy. You have to be really unhappy about what is possible on the web right now. And part of the reason you are not oftentimes is because you have suppressed your desire for what you really want. Okay? And are happy that something at all is actually available. Okay, so rather than ask, aren't you happy with Google, aren't you happy with Microsoft search engines, I want to first think about what would you do, what would you like to have if money is no object, okay, and you are a rich man, you're a rich woman, and you have this superhuman web secretary. So what would you have them do for you? I'm assuming that you know that there is web, right? Okay, so we don't have to start even before that. Okay, so what would we have them do for us? And more importantly, think of things that you'd want to have them do for you, and they are not already possible maybe. So part of the issue is, if it's already possible, then we are done with this class. We go home. But if not, then we need to figure out how to do some of those things. Anybody?
Interpret a natural language question.
That's what he wants to do. Okay, I'm going to write this down. Actually, why don't you write this down, Garrett? Okay, interpret a natural language question. Let's play this game for a minute. Okay, I'll tell you what I would like to have them do because I'm teaching the course. Let's try to write down what we want them to interpret a natural language. Okay, what else? Again, try to some extent not think of what is possible. Do you understand what I'm saying? If you think about what is possible, you'll only do what is possible already. Okay? So you want to actually think of what you would really like to have. Look, for example, you all would, I would not be surprised if many of you would fire your human secretaries if when you asked him, what do you think is the, you know, what are the flights to go from here to there? And the secretary says, oh, just go look up on this following page. And yet you thank Google and read their advertisement, because it just not gives, it doesn't give you an answer, it gives you pointers where you potentially might find answers. Okay, we have already dumbed down our requirements, partly because we assume that human secretaries deal with single humans, okay? And then Google deals with Google. And by the way, for the rest of this course, if I say Google, I don't really necessarily just mean Google. For those of you who are really into Microsoft Live search engine, that's great. If you're into Yahoo with a exclamation mark, which probably means is it still there? right? So that's fine too. Any search engine is fine. So in fact, the more recently something new came up, I forgot its name, Kuhl, yeah. And then there's ChaCha, which I really like, but that's a different story. Before that, so basically you give benefit of doubt to the search engines because you don't expect them to be able to do, you know, the kind of thing human secretary does, because this web is so big. That's why I said superhuman secretary. So assume that your secretary, you know, can do lots of things. And so basically they could, so in a way, when one way of thinking about it is, you would like the web secretary to do at web scale what a great human secretary does. You understand what I'm saying? That's one way. Of course, some of us just hate secretaries. Not specific secretaries, but we don't necessarily, we want to live everything, every piece of our life ourselves. We want to be micromanaging our life. But those people who actually, prefer to have secretaries, they want, I guess, you know, in a way of thinking about it, at a web secretary, you want a human secretary at a web scale. And I guess human secretaries do understand natural language. Then what else? Yes, sir. Help you schedule your time, okay? What else? Yes.
Tailor with my style of working and probably sometimes anticipate what I might need.
Anticipate what I might need. A really good secretary doesn't need me to tell them what I am looking for. You know, one of the history's best secretaries, at least in the sitcom land, is Radar in MASH. Those of you who are old enough to have seen MASH. By the way, if you want to understand my cultural references, you know, try to grow old very fast, because, you know, I haven't been watching much TV these days, so most of my references would be old. MASH is still evergreen, and there's a guy called Radar who essentially knows exactly what his boss wants, even before the boss even realizes that they have that need. That's what we want. We want web secretary to anticipate what we would need and be ready with the answer. Okay? And furthermore, even if I ask for the wrong thing, they should know what I have in my head and give the right thing. Right? All these things we expect from humans. And if a human secretary, you know, in the middle of, in the middle of cold winter, which is good to think about right now, you tell your secretary you wanted to, you know, change the temperature, and by mistake you tell your secretary, you know, put on the AC. They should have the gumption to realize that what you mean is put on the heating. Okay, if they do actually put on the AC and say, look, you told me to, then you'll say, yeah, here is another job, you go look for that. Okay, and so we expect people to understand what we mean. Okay, that's another thing we want. Okay, what else? Anything else?
Anticipate what will happen in the future.
Anticipate what will happen in the future. Okay, more importantly, not just future, but also the issue of knowing. By the way, remember that this whole thing actually is with respect to the web, right? The web has huge amounts of information that random people have written in random languages. Some of them formal, some of them informal, some of them readable, some of them not readable. And presumably you want your secretary to have read all of it. Not just read the way you read before the exam, but understand what you read, okay? And be able to make inferences in terms of, okay, this is true here, and this particular guy says the following thing, and they both are, you know, trustable, and so I should be able to then conclude the following thing is true. Should be able to infer. You should be able to find patterns in the information. You should be able to make inferences. This is the kind of thing that we expect. Okay? Anything else? Yes, sir. If there are many, many answers, so in particular, if there are, so basically, you need to, if you are not sure, at least you should rank your answers, okay? That's good, okay? Yes?
If there's a bias in an answer, you should
be able to detect it. Bias in what answer? In the answer that's available on the web,
yeah.
Okay.
Whoever wrote the answer is biased towards that author.
Okay. Now notice that one of the interesting things we are doing is some of these are very high level capabilities that we would not live without in our human secretaries, and some of the things, at least the last two, and you know, with no judgment involved there, are essentially coming from bottom up with respect to what is available. I wish it was slightly better. Okay, I cannot completely make your head blank. Okay, so you already know what search engines are able to do, and you're living with them, you're using whatever is the technology that's available, and so you are influenced by it, and so you have small frustrations as to, I wish they could do this little bit. But then there is also this issue of coming from the top down. What should actually be possible? You know, it's a class, right? We are not necessarily starting an IPO tomorrow. Although if you do good projects, you know, there's a chance. So the question then, so there are the ones from the bottom up side, two things that came up were bias detection and ranking answers. What I want you to do is to continue this at home, and you know, one of the first questions on the homework, and there is a homework already, homework zero's first question is essentially to continue this and write down, not pages and pages, you know, but, you know, a few things that you wish search engines can actually, I mean, the current technology can actually do, and don't worry about whether or not it's doable right now, but, you know, that's something that you should think about, okay? Okay, so are there any other pressing comments on this one that anybody would like to unload? If not, so this is a small summary, not of all the things here. Obviously, you know, there's a collective wisdom going on here, but these are the things I could write down as to what I might think would be needed in secretaries. Read the web and remember what information is there and what information is where, basically. You know, you understand all the web and know where exactly every piece of information is. Be able to reason about connections between information. Okay, and then read my mind and answer questions, or better yet, satisfy my needs even before I articulate them. Some of which came in our discussion, some of which, you know, probably are generalizations. Okay, these are things that we would like in a superhuman secretary, because those are the kinds of things that you want in a secretary. Okay, so the question, of course, one of the things that you want to keep in the back of your mind every time you are too impressed with the current state of affairs is to go back to this slide, or your version of this slide, and see, really, should I be that happy? You know, anything that's completely done is a boring course. It's a boring area to get into. There's nothing left for you to do. Okay, I'm hoping that you will figure out what is still not done. Not just what is done, because I will tell you what is done, but also what's not done yet. Okay, so the question, of course, that you want to keep in your mind is, how close is this dream to reality? You know, how much of this is actually feasible? And another thing that you want to ask yourself, those of you who are too happy with the current technology, especially search engine technology, is, are we being too easy on our search engines? Okay, that's something that you want to ask yourself. But what I really want to do after this slide is to connect this to what I would do in the course. Okay, and try to sort of make a justification as to why what I am doing is connected to this. Not exactly that I'll answer all these questions, but we would start making preparations for at least all three of these. Okay? So if you can't do any of these completely, at least fake it. Right? That's more or less, and good faking is what search engines do. Okay? Let's go back here and say, so read the web and remember all the where all the information is kept and where it is. You don't need to necessarily understand, to just remember where things are. Okay, that's information retrieval. Most of information retrieval that we'll understand, and that's how the core technology of traditional search engines, and that essentially just remembers where everything is kept. It has a big index, it knows where things are, and when you ask for something, it tries to find the right thing. Now, of course, just remembering where things are will not be enough to understand your query. Right? Because to understand your query and figure out what is needed for you, you need to understand language. To do this, you don't need to understand language, really. How search engines punt the problem is what? They do keyword queries. I don't know what the heck you wrote in that string, but I'll take these and match it with my inverted index and then see which pages seem to have these words in them. Okay? And without understanding what you are looking for. And it's kind of funny that the queries actually can be written in a huge long sentence. Okay? Or even a paragraph. But really the search engines will think of them as just a bag of words. And they think of all the information that they have seen on the web as bags of words, different bags of words, and they have pointers to all the bags. And they compare your bag to those bags, and they find out which is the best looking bag for whatever it is that you're looking for, without understanding anything more than this contains bag of entities, that contains bag of entities. Okay? That's the basic idea of search engines, and that's to understand how to do that reasonably efficiently, we will understand information retrieval. Okay? Now, obviously, information retrieval is mostly based on keywords. Okay? And as I said, what you really want to do is to kind of understand the query and not tell people where to look for the answer potentially, but give the answer. That's what you'd really like to do. Right? As I said, we would consider hiring a secretary who tells us, go to the downtown and find out, when you ask him a question. They're supposed to find out the answer and give you. So now, of course, to do that, you need to essentially, either understand natural language. In fact, one of the game we will play is if you have a scalable natural language processing technology, then you don't need this course. Okay? You don't need a whole bunch of things, because that would just be, you know, if you put natural language processing in a little computer or a big computer, it doesn't need to be given sick leave, it doesn't need to have 9 to 5 hours. They will be, you know, you can scale it as much as you want, and so potentially it can be playing part of your superhuman secretary game. Now, the only problem, of course, is natural language processing is AI complete, and AI is CS complete. So essentially, you do not have the ability to do full natural language processing. So the question is, how can you do shallow processing and still give better, increasingly better competence than what just a simple keyword search can do? Okay, to do that, what we'll look at are two things. First of all, we'll look at how to take something that's written in English and maybe convert it into sometimes a more formal representation. So for example, something that's close enough for us is databases. Databases have formal representation in the sense they have tuples. Okay, so there is a structure to each of the records. What if I can convert what is written on the web into a huge, big database of tuples? Then at least I can answer queries of the type that SQL can answer. How many of you know SQL? Yeah. So this is not exactly something to write home about. SQL is still pretty brain dead. But it looks like genius compared to keyword queries. Okay? So we will talk about how to find, to do this, you essentially have to extract structured information from unstructured text. So we will talk about information extraction. We will also need to talk about, we'll also need to talk about, since different databases that have been extracted might be using different schemas, you need to talk about how to integrate them such that you have a combined view of the world on which you can answer. So you do a little bit of information integration. Okay, and across all this, you actually look for patterns in the text or in the link structure, etc., to improve both of these pages. So for example, you can improve the ranking after you find all the bags that are close to the keyword bag that you're holding in your hand. Oftentimes, there are way too many of them. How to rank them? And you can try to use a variety of techniques, including, for example, you know, most of the way we wind up ranking pages is mining the social network that is implicit in the web pages. Okay, and so that's mining there. And you can also mine transactional patterns of people to mine what is important, what is less important, and so on. Okay, so that's how the mining aspect comes into this course. Approximately the main topics of this course are information retrieval, information integration and aggregation, information mining, plus anything else that I feel like doing. Okay, those are what we'll be doing in this class. Okay, now each of these can be a separate course, maybe multiple courses, but this is why this is a breadth-oriented introduction to all sorts of things that are relevant in making our superhuman web secretary. Okay, and we won't be able to make it completely, but at least we know what pieces are needed. Okay, yes, there was a raised hand somewhere earlier. We will look at some of the semantic web stuff. Okay. Okay. So that's the main topics, and this is that. And you know, rather than just say this is what I'll do, I try to make a reason as to why I do them. You know, think of them in terms of that slide. But that slide is also useful for you to not be too complacent. That, you know, everything is good, so I don't have anything to do other than just, you know, take exam. Okay. So what are course outcomes? At the minimum, these are your course outcomes. How do search engines work and why are some better than others? How can web be seen as a collection of structured or semi-structured data or knowledge? And if so, how can you, once you have structured information, then you can combine a piece from here to another piece from somewhere else and integrate and make. So what is the classic example of integration in databases, for those of you who remember databases? Yes, joining. Can search engines do joins? No. I mean, nobody ever really thought joins are the God's greatest gift to humanity. And yet, they are way better than what you can do with respect to just, you know, search engines. So right now, who is doing the information integration on the web? You sometimes need information from here being plugged into information into this and get answer. Who is doing it? You guys. That's why you're no longer productive. We are our own travel agent. We are our own pluggers. We are our own book searchers. We are our own, you know, all sorts of things. We just, you know, kill ourselves doing. We have no good secretaries. And we are happy about it for some reason. But so one of the things here is, so the having, once you have connected, converted the data, I mean, you could do integration at the natural language level, but it's just too hard. Because you need to convert natural language into some knowledge form and then do inference on it. What you wind up doing in essence is you extract, do superficial extraction of reasonable knowledge from the text. Okay? An example of it is if in the text you say the following pattern, X is a Y. These are called hyponym patterns, I think. Okay, then you can assume that X is actually an instance or a subclass of Y. So if I ever see in a huge amount of text, Seattle is a city, then I can write city Seattle. Now this does not mean that I completely understood anything. Right? Because after all, you can think of all sorts of pathological cases where X is a Y and it's not meant to be a subclass instance. I am teaching, so I may not be able to think, but I'm sure you guys can think right now as to lots and lots of pathological examples. In fact, one of the most interesting things in what we will wind up doing is pretty much every technique that we'll talk about, there are 10 billion and one pathological cases where it will fail. Of the classic case is bag of words example, which is how search engines search for information. Okay, you can make lots and lots and lots of examples where search engines should fail. Okay, one classic example, I don't know, you know, forget about the punctuation. There is this idea, there is this sentence that people sometimes used to play with called, okay, that's of course harder for you because you have to understand my handwriting. So I'll read it for you. There are three sentences. Think of them as three documents. Document one just says, hang him, not leave him. And document two says, hang him not, leave him. And document three says, because of his good behavior, we should let him go. Okay? Which two documents are closest in meaning, according to you? And which two documents do you think all the search engines in the world would say are identical?
One and two.
So I made you a nice example. So if you ever depend on Google finding a, you know, last minute pardon for you, you are in tough luck. Okay, there's a 50-50 chance. The point is, there are gazillion billion examples of this I can make where bag of words should fail. And yet it works reasonably. That could mean either that there are no bozos on the web making these kinds of documents, or that these kinds of documents somehow are never in the top few solutions, or that we are just too forgiving. Even if you know, Google did find this when we were looking for cases of people being let go, you'd say, oh, it's just misunderstood. Let's leave it at that. So there are lots and lots of pathological examples where most of these techniques will fail. That's because they're not doing deep reasoning. But the question is, how far can you go, I mean, how little can you do to get a big bang for the buck so that you can have the next release and then you can get, you know, better this thing. So, by the way, since we talked a lot about, without explaining to you, I thought I've been talking about bag of words model. A bag of words model essentially is, you know, a document just becomes a bag of words. So all the words just fall down and, you know, if there are multiple copies of the same word, you'll take the number of instances. The word order doesn't matter, nothing matters. No punctuation, nothing matters. Okay? Bag of words works well. Works well enough at any rate. Okay? At least according to us, we seem to be happy enough. It's nowhere near natural language processing. One question is, why not bag of letters? Would you like to consider trying bag of letters search engine? And why not? And that is an interesting point to ponder over, because there is a sweet spot in terms of full knowledge, full natural language processing on one hand, and total lunacy on the other hand. Okay, bag of letters turns out to be too close to total lunacy, because there are only 26 letters in English. Okay, I mean, in my language, Telugu, there are at least more letters, 56. Okay, but so we would be probably better off. But 26 letters means it's not going to be able to differentiate between most of the documents. It's a question of how many people, you know, walk out of the session with the search engine out of disgust. You think currently people are not walking out of sessions with search engines out of disgust? Of course there are. It's just that there are enough people who are still smitten that they, you know, we still think this is a reasonable technology. Okay? So, anyway, so we made a long detour, but the point is that even when you convert English into a structured piece of information such as a tuple so that you could then do joins and so on and so forth, it's not that you actually did full natural language processing. You did something reasonable. And so it can have all sorts of pathological cases where it's all going to be wrong. Okay? But that's just part of the game that we'll have to deal with. And then, of course, can useful patterns be mined from the pages and the data on the web? So can you make recommendations? Can you realize just from the structure of the web what pages are maybe more important than what other pages? Things of this kind. Okay? These, at least, you should be able to answer when the course is over. Okay? By the way, that's the ChaCha search engine. How many of you know ChaCha search engine? Yeah. So that's actually a bunch of people sitting and taking your queries and answering them. And the last time in spring 2007, when I taught this course, I had, I think, one of the students look before coming in, and he actually, you know, accessed it and talked to some real person who would then give answers. Okay, and there is that search engine still exists, and every once in a while, New York Times or NPR will profile them, and they're getting big bucks from venture capitalists. Why do you think it's possible? Because there is a need for superhuman secretaries. And if you cannot have superhuman secretaries, secretaries who work for 25 cents a query are still okay, which is what ChaCha is. Okay, you should try it out. It's an interesting thing where, so in fact, there is, when I teach Intro to AI, I repeat this quote by the guy who started the rocketry in US. Who is it? Gordon something. Anyway, so he said that the cheapest and easily mass producible way of producing intelligent agents still remains having babies. Right? You don't even need high school education for that. Okay? So ChaCha is essentially doing something like that. You don't need to take this course. You get a bunch of people who are looking for 25 cents a query and ask them to answer queries. Okay? But, you know, keep that in mind. So that's basically my short introduction to this course as to what we're going to be doing. There will be a take two in a minute where I'll go into more details about this and that. Okay. But we will take a small break from technical stuff and talk about some more mundane things about the class. Okay. So I am Rao Kamapati. That's my email, and there is my URL. You can't read. There's a course URL. And the most important thing to understand about this course is it's not on Blackboard. Okay, and I maintain the homepage on my machine. So you have to remember this. It's not that hard. If you just say CSE 494 ASU, you know, most search engines will find it for you. Okay. I paid them beforehand. So, Garrett, who's sitting right there, he's going to be your TA. And he's going to have office hours presumably on Wednesdays, but he'll send you the time. Okay. My own office hours are Tuesday, Thursday, right after the class. Okay. So which anyway you'll make them into office hours. So I thought I'll make them formal office hours. And then any other time you need to talk to me, you can call, you know, send me an email and set up an appointment. Okay. What else? There is a homepage which already exists. How many of you have not seen the class homepage? Okay, you're taking a web class. Okay, so assume everything is out there. Okay, and search for it, and you'll find it. Okay, there's a web page which basically has huge amounts of information about this class. I'm going to go over this again, but most of you already looked at some of it. So there is that web page there. And what I covered last time, the topics covered last time is this list. Which sort of connects to what I said. There was like three halves plus, you know, something: information retrieval, information mining, information integration. Of those, so basically we'll do, starting next week, we'll do text retrieval, vector space ranking, and we will do advanced methods of ranking, you know, in information retrieval, including latent semantic indexing. And then we will talk about indexing, crawling, which is hugely important when you convert information retrieval in the case of web. Okay, we'll see in a minute that in fact most of what we'll be doing would be stealing a traditional area that already existed before the word web existed in any context outside of Charlotte, and convert it such that it is useful to web. Okay, and traditional information retrieval normally didn't have to deal with some of the scale of the web, didn't have to deal with crawling aspects, didn't have to do with the kind of indexing, the scale of indexing, distributed indexing that search engines have to deal with. So we'll talk about that. And then we will talk about social network analysis, because in some sense it crosses multiple areas, and so it's again a traditional area where how people are connected to each other. And that normally is used to figure out who is the most influential person, you know, who is the most central person. Okay, these are not one and the same. The most central person is the one that you go to her, she would know who you should go to get anything done. Okay, most influential person on the other hand is the one that most people wind up eventually going to get, you know, important things done, like that. Okay, so there are ways of understanding social network analysis from graph theoretic perspective, and it turns out that social network analysis is useful across the board, starting from search, because web pages have links between each other, and so they in essence generate a sort of a social network, whether it's implicit or explicit, whether it's implied or not. Okay, when you put a link to somebody, then you're sort of making an endorsement. Okay, and so how could you use that to improve ranking? That's one of the things that we'll talk about. And the usual ideas of page rank and authorities, hubs and hits algorithms essentially come from straightforward application of social networks to web social networks. Okay, and we'll talk about that. And then that's sort of the thing about traditional information retrieval plus web search engines. And then we will look at mining aspects. At least last time, that's the order I did. We looked at mining aspects, looking for patterns, recommendation systems, and also extracting patterns from the text and so on. Okay, so that's about those many classes. I think 2 plus 1 plus 2, 5 classes. And then we'll talk about if you were to convert, so from the text, you then mined, let's say, you know, this flow is from the text and ranking text documents without understanding what you're looking for. you then mine some patterns from them, and you know, one way is you kind of mine records, okay, and you constructed databases. Then you can support database style querying on that. Okay, so the question then would be, how do you do that, and is that easy, is that hard, what are the extra difficulties that come in? Okay, once again, as I said, this part comes from the traditional area of information, this part comes from the traditional area of information retrieval applied to web, this part comes from the traditional area of social networks applied to web, this part comes from the traditional area of mining machine learning applied to web, and this comes from the traditional area of databases applied to web. Okay, so that's the basic idea. Yes, sir. That part we are not going to be doing here. Okay. So, as I said, that's actually very close to my heart. You know, in a minute we'll talk about my schizophrenia in my life. I do half work in this, half work in something else. And in that area, I care about plans and plan recognition. Okay. What Radar was doing is ascribing intentions to his boss, understanding the plan the boss was in the middle of executing, and recognizing it. And once I recognize your plan, I can complete it.
Oh, no.
Okay.
Sorry,
it's all artificial intelligence, right?
So,
okay, so we mostly will look at text-oriented data and structure of that. I would not be doing heterogeneous data-based, multimedia retrieval, music retrieval, image retrieval. I won't be spending too much time. Okay. Okay. So that's that. And then books and the lack thereof, there are no books, partly because there are books for each one of these areas, at least in the traditional sense, and there are some books for applying the traditional area to the new areas, but there's nothing that crosses the entire thing, so I won't have books. And so we have a whole bunch of readings that are ready here that, you can look up. Let's see, can I read this? Can't see a thing without this. Okay, so there is a CSC 494 readings, and it gives you the papers that you have to read, and the most important thing is the indentation is important. The main level papers are required readings, indented are optional readings. If it's deeply indented, that means it's deeply optional. Okay. But on the other hand, in any of these courses, right, it's up to you. Are you in it for passing the exam? In which case, really, you should find some other course. I'm serious. Because passing exam is not the point, for most, senior level and intro to graduate level courses. You should be interested in, picking something in that you want to learn a lot more about than I can ever teach you here. And so I'm going to be showing you where the information that you might find interesting. Okay, I'm Meta Google here. Okay, so that's the readings, and we'll use that. Okay, one thing I do say is although there are no books that I would require you to have, this book is a cute one because it's this book. I just got my copy. This is Introduction to Information Retrieval 2008, it just came out. The good thing about this is if you are a poor graduate student or a poor undergraduate student, it's available on the web. You just go here and click. The entire book is available. So you won't have to feel that you're stealing. On the other hand, if you need to feel you're stealing to actually read it, feel so. But Cambridge University Press, one of the nicest things is when they publish a book, they also put it completely on the web. And they actually have the entire PDF that you can print, but I would be very surprised if you can print, unless you have a rich uncle who has a pre-printer, you can't print this book for less than $42, and that's what Amazon charged me. Okay. So I would say this is quite a good book to keep track of. Again, I'm not requiring you to buy this book, but I would probably have more links from there for reading material because it's written as a textbook. sometimes something that's already written as a textbook is easier to read than something that's written as a paper. Although I will make you read some classic papers, it's important. Okay. But as I said, all the chapters are available on the web, so you can read them up that way too. But this only covers about between one third to half of the course. So it's still not the full textbook. And for the other pieces, the things that are relevant are some of these books here. This one gives sort of the analysis of web structure and using social network analysis, etc. This one is again mining part, mining the web. These two are relevant to XML standards and semantic web stuff, which is basically if you already have data converted into some structured form, but it is in very different schemas, then how do you make sense of them together? Okay. And we will wind up doing all of these in the class, but those are the references. What you really are required to keep track of are the readings that I ask you to do. These are the prerequisites. 310, 412 databases would help. This is the only required prerequisite. These would help. If you have 471 or the 412 databases, it would be very nice. If you had 471 intro to AI, it would be even greater. And some of the linear algebra and probability statistics that you probably haven't used, so you forgot, so you'd have to remember them because you're going to use them. Okay. And then, as I said, in the homework zero, there's question one, which is write down some things that you wish search engines can do, which is sort of bottom-up version of the top-down question I had. And question two essentially is asking you to get, you know, refamiliarize yourself with matrix theory, okay, and knowing multiplication of matrices, multiplication of matrix by vector, and stuff like that. Okay, so that's the homework one. Okay, what this course is not intended to be, it's one aspect, it's not going to tell you anything about plan recognition, it's not going to tell you anything much about multimedia retrieval. Although some of the most effective methods for multimedia retrieval have been to, provide text annotations for the multimedia and use them to retrieve. That's the easiest thing to do right now. If you think, understanding natural language written in typewritten letters is hard, try to understand spoken English, especially mine, okay, and then convert it into an actual written document. So going from spoken English to written document is already hard, and then from written document to meaning is even, although sometimes crossover. Okay. So we probably, that stuff we won't do, it's important. What else I won't do is I'm not going to teach you how to be a webmaster. Okay. Probably many of you already are one, and so you can teach me more than I can teach you. But if you are here for that, or if you're here for doing web programming for the heck of it, you're in the wrong class. It's important, it'll get you jobs, but I'm not going to teach it. I won't teach you how to do Java programming, but I'll expect you to do it. Okay, because the project for this class involves using Java to do search engine. Okay. So that's that. I'm not really going to teach you how to make money on the web. And you can read that when you have time. And then, as I said, I have my own motivations, or I have actually two different areas that I work in. It's not particularly important for you to know the biography of the teacher, but to the extent my biases would affect your thinking, you should know where I'm coming from. So I really work in two different areas, automated planning scheduling, which is one area. The other is this stuff, information integration, especially the third part in the course stuff that I'm talking about. Those are the things I have research projects going on. And so you would probably see that, I would make connections to the rest of my life, which is my art planning and scheduling and AI stuff. Okay, and there are connections to be made there. And then, we have done a bunch of work, and we'll probably talk about some of them in passing at least towards the end of the semester. Okay, any questions on anything that has gone until now? Okay, grading. There's going to be projects and homeworks for 45%, midterm, final about 40%, and participation about 15%, and I just hope they add up, okay, to 100%. That's approximately how we'll be doing the grading. Okay, participation is important. Reading papers and basically also taking part in discussions in the class, as well as we might have a class blog, in which case if I ask you questions on the blog, you have to answer. Okay, and you don't have to answer all of them, but if you never answered anything, if you never had any opinion at all on the blog, then you didn't participate. Okay, class interaction in general is important, both inside and outside the class. Don't sleep in the class. I haven't yet seen anybody sleeping. The one thing is this is an undergraduate course, class listed as an introductory graduate level course, except it's an oxymoronic thing to say because there are about six times as many graduate students here than undergraduate students. So undergrad students are the white basketball players of this class. Okay. So we will give them and we will give them special preference. In fact, I'm serious. For those of you, it's meant to be an undergraduate class. Okay. So if in fact you think you are having a hard time, it's because you're doing a real undergraduate class. And if grad students think it's hard, you should not have been a grad student. Okay. You can see that I'm very modest in what I can do here, but at any rate, that's the expectation here. The only differentiation I will do, okay, this should have been 494, I don't know why I don't change it. The only differentiation between the undergraduates and graduates is that at the last minute when we convert numbers into letters with my infinite wisdom, I have two completely different lists, one just for 494 students, one just for 598 students, and I would give grades. Conversion is done independently of each other. The only connection is that the thresholds for undergraduates will never be tighter than those for graduate students. So because otherwise we'll have to close our graduate program, you know, and admit that undergrads are actually smarter, which may well be the case, but we don't want to admit it. Okay, so that's basically the deal as far as the grading is concerned. Are there any questions on the grading? Okay. Project. There is only one project with three parts. That's what I expect to make you guys do. It's essentially extending and experimenting with a mini search engine. The first part is really simple. It's mostly to get you to deal with Java in the context of a reasonably large text database. Okay. And second part would make you do some ranking, the usual page rank or hits kind of a thing. And third part is more open-ended. There are certain things I'll ask you to do and certain things that you can decide to add interesting bells and whistles to your project. Okay, you can look up the description of the project online. It's available from the homepage. I will change it unless I say this is the project now. It still can change, but it's likely to be very similar to the project that I have done that you have done in the class. So you can look it up to see whether you feel queasy about it or not. Expected background is Java programming, and you should know it. We are not going to teach you. I definitely can't teach you. He may or may not be willing to, but that's the deal. Okay, this is a course on web. Okay, and I just told you that everything has an answer on the web. And in fact, one of the interesting things that I've noticed is I have an 11-year-old son, and the new generation of kids, and that might include some of you here, I don't know how young some of you guys are here, have this sort of dyed in the wool metaphysical certainty that there is answer out there. I grew up thinking there may or may not be answers, so I shouldn't be asking too many questions. My son thinks everything has an answer. You just ask Google, ask Yahoo, ask somebody else. Okay, so we know that all of this stuff is out there, and in particular the specific questions that I would ask in this class have answers out there. And they may also be on my own web page, because Google caches my web page, and it has archives of various versions. Okay, so I admit that upfront. Okay, I'm not going to change the course just because you're taking it right now. The assumption is never that nobody knows it, and but that you may not know it, so you have to show that you understood. Okay, so if you find by trawling the web the answers for some particular question that you're supposed to do by yourself, and I didn't say, do web search and find out. And if I can prove that, then you're in big trouble. Okay, I say this once, I will assume honesty, but I will deal with it pretty severely if you don't follow that. Okay, and the plus side of it is you get a huge amount of the credit for this class by the work that you do inside at home rather than under proctored exams, which is the way the real life is. You know, proctored exams are silly things we made because we can't trust each other. Okay, and just hope that you would actually keep this trust. Okay, and if you have a question, I mean, you don't have to be, you know, particularly paranoid. You know, if you have a question, ask me. You know, can I check this? That's fine. You know, you can ask me and I'll answer. Okay. Sociological issues, attendance in the class is very important. I'm really crazy about people not showing up to the class, and I'll remember your faces and I'll stew about it, which is not good for you. Okay, so you cannot miss the class. If you want to sort of take a lackadaisical attitude of showing up whenever you feel like, this is not the class for you. Okay, remember that. And then active concentration is very important. I'm expecting you to be awake, and don't read State Press here. And then interactiveness is very important. These are requirements, you know, and you have to assume that I'm going to be paying attention to this. Okay, and then life on the bleeding edge, we are going to have 494 is based on readings. As I said, it crosses a bunch of boundaries, and so, you know, you have to keep track of the readings, and it's not a single textbook based course, although there are pieces of the course that have good information in the textbooks. And as far as the slides for the class are concerned, there is a version of all these slides that I used last time. You're welcome to download them and look at them before coming to the class. But I keep changing the version I used this year until the last minute. Otherwise, I'll fall asleep in the class. Okay, so I will change them until the last minute. But I would not, until the class is over, you can't be sure what I've taught in the class. But it will be very close to the things that have been done in the class. Okay. So I won't most likely give any handouts other than the one that I gave you. And the one thing about slides that I want you to keep in mind is that I tend to put lots of slides and then hide them if I don't expect to use, you know, teach them in the class. And so when you print PowerPoint slides, please check the, you know, tick off the print hidden slides button, so that otherwise you would be learning a lot more than I taught, which is not a bad idea. But, you know, you might get confused. There may not be any order. Okay. Reading for the next week. So that's all about the mundane stuff, and then I'm going to go for the next 15 minutes into the second take on the course, which is going back and giving you more information about how traditional areas are connected to what we're going to do. And the readings for next week are basically we're going to start talking, not next week, next class onwards really, is we're going to start talking about text retrieval. Okay. And so either you can read the chapter on text retrieval, which is the main reading in the information retrieval, or you can read all these chapters 1, 8, 6, and 7 in that order from this book. Okay. I don't expect you to read all of them before coming, but you should start reading, and you should read parallelly. Any questions on the mundane stuff? Okay. So this is now course overview, take two. And we're going to do it slightly more leisurely as to what specific things we'll wind up doing and why we do them. So you essentially would think in this course of web as a collection of information. Of course, what kind of information? Okay, you can. We will mostly focus on web as a collection of text, structured data, semi-structured data. Okay. And then we will also do a little bit about connected, dynamically changing user-generated content. In fact, most web pages are that. These are generated by humans. And they're connected to each other. Okay. One interesting thing, of course, is the connections between pages sometimes would be explicit, in the sense there is a href link, and sometimes is implicit, in the sense it's in the text saying, I really read this neat stuff on Rao's page, and there's no link to it. And so you have to dereference what Rao's page is and then convert it into an href. Okay, and being able to do that is sometimes very useful, actually. Okay, and then this is also there on the web. Of course, web can also be thought of as having multimedia information, allowing updates, allowing transactions, all that fun stuff. But I won't do much of it here. Okay. Now, the question, of course, is if web is a large collection of at least this kind of information, what do we want to do with it? Okay. We can do search. We can search for relevant information. We can do directed browsing, things related to what I'm looking for, and I start looking at one at a time. We can do aggregation. That means, for example, take the information from multiple pages, put it together, and provide a view of it. We can do integration, which is take the information from one page, plug it into some program in another page, and take the result. That sort of integration. And you may want to also look for patterns. Okay, here is an interesting thing. Suppose you come from Mars and you have no idea, although Martians also nowadays know about water apparently. But suppose you came from Mars and you have no idea whether water flows uphill or downhill. How do you find out? And you don't know how to talk to people, you know. So you can ask Google, it turns out. Okay, how do you ask Google? It's not that Google understands language. What it does, if you just type water flows uphill and see how many hits are there for that query, okay, and water flows downhill and see how many hits are there for the other query and see the majority, you know, as of today and until you go back and put in extra pages just to confuse people, saying water keeps flowing uphill in Arizona. Right now, as of today, it still says water flows downhill, majority. Okay, now that's a pattern. It's a pattern that you are able to get. It's a simple kind of pattern that you're able to get just by looking at the number of answers for a query. Okay, and even though this looks like a very silly example, I have both a sillier example and a much less silly example of the same idea. Okay, a sillier example is there was a name of a student that I mentioned earlier, Jacqueline Nie, who is in Microsoft Research Beijing. He's one of my first database information integration students. Very smart guy, but doesn't, you know, was sort of iffy about construction of English sentences, as most of us are. And so if he wasn't sure whether or not a sentence is constructed right, he would ask Google. Because every sentence that you would write, most of them are probably there. How many of you use Google to check spelling without actually start the spelling? You give the word, and then it'll come back with the better spelling. Right, and also if there are multiple spellings, it will say 2,000 people seem to think this is the word, and 10,985,000,000,000,000 people seem to think this other the word, and then you can decide, you know, you can be the Robert Frost and say, I want my spelling, I don't want to go with the, you know, masses. Now this is a very simple form of emergent aggregated information that's not there in any single page, but you're able to get them from multiple pages. Okay, a more interesting version of this is, in fact, we will talk towards the end of the semester techniques which will essentially, remember I said X is a Y, can then be used to say that, well, that means probably, you know, if you have something like city, Seattle, then you can use that to say, well, Seattle is a city, and then you write it as a structured sentence. What if you did it wrong? What if, in fact, it's one of those pathological examples where you shouldn't have converted this way? You can actually validate by two ways, right? One is ask people. If you ask people, you killed yourself, basically. May as well let the people do it. Okay? Another is essentially to use the text of the web, the pages of the web itself, to assess the probability associated with this assertion. Seattle is a city. And we'll talk about that. Just as I assess the probability of water flowing upward versus downward, just by looking at the number of hits. Okay, you can do that there. Now here's another, since we're talking about that and city of Seattle, here's another related thing where sometimes, you know, when you had city Seattle, you just extracted this and you're not sure, you, the search engine, is not sure of the, you know, a program. And you really would like to ask somebody. If you ask people, it's a plain dead idea, right? Because nobody is going to help you. So the question then is, as I said, one idea is to use the existing web itself. The other idea is to make people help you, but make them feel as if they're having fun. Okay, this is the Tom Sawyer idea of getting other people to do your work. How many of you remember the Tom Sawyer, you know, part where he needs to paint somebody's fence, And he starts, you know, he's having this orgiastic pleasure during doing this, and then every kid in the neighborhood says, can we do this, can we do this, and they all do it for him. So that's an idea. Get people to do stuff free for you. Okay. Now, when one classic case where this occurs is annotating images with text. If you have an image and you don't know how to actually understand the image and see that this contains the following thing, right? If you can get people to annotate what the image contains, then it's great, right? Now the question, of course, is how do you go about doing it? Here are two ideas. Idea one is Amazon came up with the idea and said 20 cents for, you know, basically checking whether the annotation is correct or not by humans. And they put, I guess, about $3 billion for that, and that got over in 2 days. And they stopped that program. Okay. It's no longer available. Okay. Idea two, make it into a game. Okay. People are crazy about doing stuff free if they think they're having fun. The question is, how do you make it fun for them? Okay. And in fact, one of the most interesting pieces of work that got done recently is this guy, I forget his name now, but most of you probably remember, who did the capture. And he also did these games, the ESP game, okay, who is now an assistant professor at CMU. And, you know, each of them, and in fact, his program now is used in the Google image search so that you can play this game, okay? And they have been able to get a lot of people to freely annotate the images. It's a brilliant idea in the sense that, in fact, the way it works is the same exact image is shown to two completely randomly selected people at the same time. And you are supposed to start typing pre-associate words with respect to this image. And you get points for your extrasensory perception if you and this other bozo agree. Right? So you are having, I have so many points, and, you know, apparently this guy had to stop some people from playing because, you know, they were just hugging, you know, they were not having a life. But the advantage is, if in fact two completely random people wind up agreeing on one word, okay, in describing a particular random figure, it's probably a very high probability that that word has something to do with that figure. Now, sometimes it can be wrong too. For example, I think the classic example that he gives is when many times when he would show the picture of Bush, multiple people simultaneously will say something like Bozo. And right. By the way, this is my last Bush joke. I think the guy is down, so we shouldn't make fun of him anymore. But you know, it's an interesting point that you got people to do stuff free. Now, this is something we don't teach you in computer science: how to make things free for other people so that they will do it for you. Okay, I won't probably go too much into detail on that. But if you need web scale help from people, and if you pay web scale, if you pay even little bit, you will go web scale bankrupt. Okay, you need to find other ways. Either you automatically learn from the pages on the web, or you make it fun for people to help you. And every new game has to be made fun again. And it's a very interesting direction. And in fact, the guy who does this essentially calls this. Does anybody remember the name of this guy? Louis Wanan. He's from Guatemala originally, and he's a CMU grad student. And one of the things he points out essentially is that human brain is the most underutilized CPU out there. And you know this already, seeing the way your brain works, and we barely use it, okay? And so, cycle stealing, you know, use other people's cycles, okay, to get your work done. Okay, so what do you want to do with this? You can search, you can directed browse, you can aggregate, you can integrate, you can do pattern finding. How do we do it? Depends on your model. Okay, if you're doing search and a retrieval on text or on structured data or on logical knowledge, the methods will differ. Okay, so for example, here are three different things: a generic web page containing text, and an employee record, and a movie review. The interesting thing about this, a generic web page containing text, is just totally unstructured text. Okay, so if you're not from that language, which is what computer is when it's looking at your English pages, it doesn't make sense at all. Okay, an employee record, on the other hand, even if you are not from US and you're not aware of English, anybody can see that here seems to be a record with this one, you know, here's one column, here's another column, here's another column, here's another column. So there's some structure to the information. And they seem to have funny symbols as their names. So I know these are the attributes, these are the values. I don't know what the heck they mean, but I know at least the structure of the information. Okay? And then the third is a movie review. One of the interesting things about it is most of the movie review as well as email messages, they are semi-structured. Parts of them are very structured. You know, an email has a header, which is very structured information. And then there's body where this guy goes on and on, and that's unstructured, right? So you could use, depending on, you know, the model, the kind of data you have, this is English, then you essentially do information retrieval or natural language processing, which we give up upfront because it's too hard. Okay. Or if it's employee record, you can do SQL, which looks great compared to keyword search. Okay. And if it is movie review, you can do sort of an SQL version which can deal with semi-structured data. And basically XML and XQuery would be helpful, for example, there. Okay. One thing, and the last thing I'll tell you for today, and before we come back next time, is we talked about structure in the previous page, and structure does help query. Okay. You can ask more and more expressive queries if you know something about the structure of the, and you can answer more and more expressive queries if you know the structure of the data, of the document in front of you. So here are three queries. Give me all pages that have words get, rich, quick. You don't need to understand what get is, what rich is, what quick is. This is what information retrieval engines do. They essentially think of this as a bag of three words and look for all the documents that have all of these words, do some sort of a ranking and give you those documents, pointers to the documents. Give me the social security numbers of all the employees who have stayed with the company for more than 5 years and whose yearly salaries are 3 standard deviations away from the average salary. Really boring query, but you cannot answer it using keyword queries. Of course, when you say keyword, you can always say, if you can understand full natural language, then you can answer all of these. Yes, I agree. But we remember that that's the elephant in the room. Okay? Most of these guys will go out of business if we can have scalable natural language processing. But you don't have to worry. It's not going to be happening anytime soon because it's an AI complete problem. But we can make more and more shallow, at least shallow, less and less shallow natural language processing, or NLP light. Okay? In fact, the best information retrieval is NLP light. Okay? That's what you do. And then the third case, give me all mails from people from ASU written this year which are relevant to get rich quick. To figure out that these are mails from people from ASU, you need to know the fields which tell you that this is from ASU, this is not from ASU. And to figure out it's relevant, you just look at the body and do the keyword search on the body. These are three completely different kinds of queries. And if you only have unstructured data, you can only do that. You're doomed to doing that. Or you have to understand the unstructured data, unstructured text, and be able to answer these kinds of queries. Okay, and of course, there is a fourth thing, which is what's the meaning of life, which I'm not even writing. Okay, but that requires a lot more understanding of the entire text in the world. Okay, and so this is keyword queries, and you can have keyword query language that you can support on the normal text. Okay, and these are sort of structured queries on purely, fully structured document. SQL is the kind of language you support there. And then this is semi-structured data, and there is a variation which sort of tries to combine best of keyword queries and SQL queries and fails to do both, that we'll see, called XQuery, which is XML-oriented querying language, okay? For which special cases of that correspond to SQL and keyword queries, okay? One, I do want to say this too, and then you can go. One question, of course, is if you don't have structure, if you only have text, you don't know how to do NLP, then you're stuck with this. what if I start with unstructured text and partially extract structure from it? Then I can do these other things. Okay? So one of the interesting things is, how do you get structure even if the underlying document or data is unstructured? You extract structure from it. Now, how do you extract structure? Here are three normal ways, and we will look at all of them. One simple idea, it turns out, is most of the data on the web is generated by back-end databases. Okay? And the databases have structured data, and they think you are going to read them, you, the English-speaking or Chinese-speaking person, so they convert it into bad English or bad Chinese and show it to you. And your program then has to reconvert it back into, you know, get rid of this unnecessary stuff. So, for example, if they might have, you know, capitals of countries, and they say India, New Delhi, right? And it will convert this into a wrapped sentence, something which looks like sentence, a canned sentence, saying the capital of India is New Delhi. It looks like something which is sort of English to people who read it, so they feel good. Okay, if on the other hand, if you put a tuple notation, India, comma, New Delhi, apparently people will get mad. Okay, so this is why you do this. However, your program, on the other hand, would much rather have tuple begin, India, comma, New Delhi, tuple end, because that's much easier for it to deal with. So you need to unwrap the data. Okay, and so oftentimes, since this data was originally wrapped, unwrapping it is easy. In fact, this is sort of a metaphysical comment. If in fact there is some truth to be found and somebody sort of wrapped it, then you can assume that by making various kinds of progress, you will find the truth. If on the other hand, you are supposed to do normal discovery, the way science works, you don't quite know that somebody wrapped something, you know, to just so that you won't understand. Okay? So unwrapping turns out to be very easy, comparatively, because it was originally very structured, and all you need to do is undo the nonsensical, you know, Englishification, Anglicization, and then you get back. And so you call this technology, unwrapping technology, to keep things very unambiguous, you call this unwrapping technology wrappers. Okay, don't ask me why, but wrappers unwrap, you know, things which have been converted from structured data into bad English or bad Chinese. That's the easy part. Okay? The other part is extract structure. You know, if it is not originally structured, then extract structure. So you look for hyponym patterns like this, X is a city, and X is a Y, and say that it must mean X must be the entity, Y must be the property. And then you have a candidate statement now, and then you can try to see how likely is it. This is essentially the information extraction. It's a very nice area. What it is really natural language processing light. You're not doing full natural language processing, but you're not doing something as simple as this. Okay, we'll talk about that too. The third one we'll talk about is annotate the page with metadata, which shows the structure of the page. Okay, this is basically the idea of semantic web. We'll talk about that too. So presumably, I write every page of mine in English so that you can read, and then I will have an annotated version in the background which is written in some logical format. If so, then the machines will eat the logic and people will eat the text. Turns out it's not an easy idea. A, you can't get people to do anything. Okay? I mean, this web is one, in fact, the most decentralized medium there is. In fact, just the moment people find out that you can use web to figure out which way the water is flowing, they can go put pages such that the answer becomes the opposite. Okay? But then there will be an arms race, so some other goody two shoes will put enough pages to say that water does flow downhill, and so there's a nice arms race. Okay? But you can never have metaphysical certainty in these cases. And similarly, if people put an annotation, that could be bogus annotation. That could be using a logical language and predicates that are different from somebody else's logical language and predicates. And so then, instead of just understanding a bunch of text, you know, a language, now you have this issue of making sure that the knowledge from different sources is mapped together. It's hard, But, you know, that's another alternate approach. We'll talk about that too. And the reason these are brought up is because of the previous thing which said, if you do have structure, you can use it to answer more interesting queries. Okay? And we'll come back next class and essentially talk about this slide and then go into text retrieval. Okay? Yeah.